Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we're funded by the Great Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, please go to pnwa.org. And as I've been saying recently, if you are thinking about re-upping your membership to the PNWA, if you are a member, if you've let that membership lapse, or you're thinking about signing up, this is a great time to do it, because during this month, if you sign up for the PNWA, you get a free half-hour coaching session with, well, myself, your one and only. If you have any questions about how to sign up, go to pnwa.org, or if you have any questions about what coaching services are like with me, you can go to williamknauer.com, where all my information is located. I should also say that if you're in the Seattle area, tomorrow, Thursday, October 3rd, I will be at East West Books in Ravenna, where I am the first Thursday of every month, hosting the Authors Roundtable, where all are welcome, and you can come and we talk about all things having to do with writing and the writing life. All experience levels are welcome, and everything is on the table. And finally, of course, if you need a little comfort, if you need a little support for your writer's soul, please pick up a copy of Write Within Yourself, an author's companion, available where all those fine books are sold. So writers always, I think, have to deal with the question of identity. It comes up often. Sometimes it comes up with the genres we write in. Sometimes it just comes up with who we are as we filter through these characters who are both us and not us. But identity is certainly an issue that today's guest, Malia Masood, has dealt with in her life. She was born in Pakistan, but in 1972, I believe, and moved here to the United States with her family in 82, and so grew up as an American citizen, but in 2003, of all times, decided to take a trip back to her land of birth, her birthland, her homeland, to Pakistan, and she chronicled that adventure in her wonderful and very readable memoir, Dizzy in Karachi, A Journey to Pakistan, and she's with us today to talk to us about writing, about travel, about Pakistan, and just anything else we can think of. Malia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you decided to do something rather brave and, well, but necessary to you, which was in 2003, which is shortly after you graduated from undergraduate school, or was that graduate school?
No, I was in graduate school at the time.
You're in graduate school.
Summer break, yeah. So okay. It was the summer in between, you know, first and second year of grad school. And I think it was really just landing that internship in the capital in Islamabad that really propelled me to go. This time, I really wanted to have an official reason to go, not just wandering around like I had done in my former travels. I needed an alibi, an official basis for going there. So I thought it would be great to just, you know, work, and that would ground me and give me a bit of a routine and then hopefully travel. But I had no idea how any of this was going to pan out. Nothing was planned at all.
Right.
And then I just really felt compelled, and most all my travels have been like this, where it's almost like hearing a voice inside you and you're just compelled to listen to that voice. You know, you have to do this. And the timing becomes very, very significant. And I knew that if I didn't have the nerve and just, you know, take the plunge, I often call it like a leap in the dark, it wouldn't have happened. So that's why I went when I went, and obviously the timing wasn't great. There never is a good timing to go to Pakistan or any other Muslim country, what have you.
Yeah.
But it's just, for me, it happened while I was in school, and I think being in school made it more urgent because I was having to deal with two completely different versions of Pakistan. I was studying international affairs, so I was taking a lot of classes, you know, in politics and things like that. So it's very much, you know, current affairs outlook on Pakistan, and it was all the horror stories, you know, all
right.
the stuff we hear about in the news and read about in the papers. And I had to reconcile that with my reality, which is how I grew up in the 70s, which was a very idyllic childhood and very, very westernized. And there was this huge clash, you know, between the past and the present. And so going back was a way to kind of make sense of it, of the whole thing. And it was also just trying to figure out what this country meant to me. How much was it a part of me? Did I really belong there? Where was really home? So all those questions were kind of sitting there, simmering for a long time. And the job just, you know, made it a little bit easier to take that plunge. And so I was in Boston at the time, studying at Tufts University, and I just took the flight to Islamabad, not knowing what was going to happen, and I just took off for about 5 months.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You talked about having to reconcile the Pakistan that you were sort of hearing about, reading about, and studying in school, and I'm sure reading about in newspapers and so on, and then the Pakistan of your youth, which was lived intimately and, of course, through the eyes of a child. And I was listening to you describe that. It reminds me so much of often what the writer's job is, which is the lens, the big lens of things like the media, which has to deal in broad strokes. And the writer always deals in intimate detail, which is a different view of reality, which is the everyday reality, which is what you were trying to bring together, sort of. Would you say?
Exactly. Yep. That's, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because oftentimes this is what I say when I give talks about writing and Pakistan in general. I say there's many different lenses, right, at which we can view a country or a place. You, in Pakistan's case, you've got the lens of politics, which is obviously the one that we most often use. That's what the media informs us. But there's other lenses. There's culture, there's history, there's religion. And in my case, you know, there's identity, there's belonging, and there's more universal lenses. So what I wanted to do is use all of these different sort of lenses or angles and shine a light onto Pakistan and show some of the other angles, kind of like what I like to say, the Pakistan beneath the headlines, the hidden aspects of the country and the places. And having this dual identity, both as a Pakistani and an American, allowed me to do that in a way that was deeper, almost like, you know, traveling with a two-way mirror. I could really look at both sides. And,
yeah.
And sympathize and relate. So it was very dual-sided. And I really, really, really wanted to see this hidden aspect of Pakistan, because it was confusing to me too. You know, I mean, there's all this negativity and all of this reactionary stuff going on. And then I just, you know, recall growing up and being infatuated with ABBA, having a crush on Rob Lowe. And it's in this country that we tend to demonize and fear and have so much confusion about, and so much of my identity with Pakistan is rooted in Western pop culture, which is what I think is kind of interesting to people who are not so familiar with this hidden Pakistan, that all of this happened to me, to my dad, you know, in a country that we don't associate with Westernization.
You know, but what reminds me of? Have you seen, I got the book, and they made a movie out of it, but now it's escaping me, but it was that graphic novel about Iran by a woman.
Persepolis.
I remember being really surprised, when you talked about being in love with Rob, having a crush on Rob Lowe and ABBA, I could only think about all of the, in that story, about the young Iranian teenagers and youth, you know, coveting American and Western rock and roll, and, you know, getting those tapes.
Yeah.
And I had no idea, growing up in the West, that there was an infatuation with our music and culture.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, you said something great. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so the pop culture theme is very, very pervasive in my family. So for me, you know, I was the whole 70s generation.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to add to how I came about to writing the book, because when I went to Pakistan, I did not go with the intent of writing about it, which is usually how my travels do pan out. I just go and have this larger-than-life experience, and then later on, I ended up having a need or feeling compelled to write about it. So Pakistan,
right.
The trip happened 2003, and then I think, 8 years later, I decided to write about it, not because of the trip or anything like that. It was just hearing my dad mention that he heard when, you know, he had gone to Dizzy Gillespie concert in 1956, Karachi, and that blew me away.
Wow.
To hear that he had, you know, gone and seen this great American jazz artist in Karachi, of all places. So that really intrigued me, and I did some research about it, and that really sparked the flame to write the book. It gave me that spread I was looking for. So again, you know, the pop culture theme is very relevant, because I really want people to know that you can have that affinity for Western pop culture, even in a country like Pakistan. And that's a little bit surprising, because I don't think it's an association we automatically make.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Right.
But you know what it reminds me of when you said Pakistan beneath the headlines? Tell me if it's sort of like this, but this is what flashed into my mind. Let's say you have these friends, and let's say you're a young person, you have these friends, and their parents get divorced, right? The headline is, parents get divorced, right? Heavy duty, you know, it's the severing of the family and so on. That's the headline. But beneath that is the entire life that was led that brought that event to fold, filled with all the little details of life and all the little decisions and all the little human experiences. And so we see the headlines of Pakistan or Iran or wherever, but beneath that is the human life that is led the same as it's led everywhere, more or less, in terms of the same desires, same everything, including a desire to listen to ABBA, all things, of all things. Is that a pretty good comparison, would you say?
Absolutely, yeah. And the way I traveled there, too, you know, I was living with family, so I got a very deep insider glimpse into the local culture. The first place where I was working, I was living with a group of college students, all girls, and it was like a shared home that we were all living in. And I got a great insight into everyday lives, you know, Pakistani, modern Pakistani women that we don't often see in the media. And you know, these girls were breaking stereotypes right and left. They were studying computer science, and yet they were addicted to MTV and sitcoms like Friends and whatnot, and hanging out at the mall. And again, that whole blending of East and West, I really find that fascinating. And how it plays out, you know, and how you can kind of go back and forth between these worlds.
But the East and West has blended in you, hasn't it? It has to have. I mean, you're like a living version of it, singular version.
Yeah, and it's so entrenched that I cannot even separate it anymore and pull out which is Pakistan, what is America? You know, it's just such a mishmash now.
Yeah.
But the funny thing that happened when I was traveling is, though I was searching for this sort of Pakistani identity, the more I traveled, the more I was getting in touch with the American inside me. Because the very act of traveling and doing this, you know, something kind of, you know, a little bit brave to just venture out by yourself in the hinterlands of this country, required, you know, just a great deal of determination and just that kind of idea of I can do whatever I want, and very individualistic, and those are very American qualities, and I hadn't realized how much that was a part of me.
Yeah.
And I ended up defending more and more things about, you know, American culture and kind of becoming an ambassador of the United States. Just like now, I'm more of an ambassador of that part of the world. So it's funny how it plays out, and people responded a lot better to me when I would say I'm American rather than say I'm Pakistani.
Wow.
So
But, you know, but the thing is, it doesn't surprise me that while you were in Pakistan, you found yourself to be an ambassador for America. And now that you're in America, you find yourself being an ambassador for Pakistan because the truth always lies deeper than the headlines. I mean, and so your Pakistani friends that you were meeting only dealt with America in very broad strokes, and they weren't dealing with the truth, which is so much more nuanced than that. And that just like the Americans now are not dealing with the truth of what it is to live in Pakistan. So you find yourself in both cases trying to share what the actual truth of life in these places is.
Right.
Is that right? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Which is what
writers
should do. Writers have to try to dig into what the truth of a moment and a place is. That's, I mean, no matter what you're writing, you're trying to catch that essence.
Absolutely. But I find that it's very hard to analyze an experience, especially a journey, as you're in the process of traveling.
Yeah. Oh,
it breaks up the momentum. It breaks up the momentum. It's not as spontaneous. I mean, I try to keep notes sometimes, you know, just jotting things down in a journal. But really, and this is kind of why it turns into memoirs, you need that time and the distance to give a perspective.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the writing can be very reactionary and very one-dimensional. And having written the book so many years later, just gave a lot more texture, I think. And I needed that distance and that time to really reflect upon it. So.
Yes.
Which is why it's hard to write, too.
Well, it is. And you have to be willing to take your very, you know, that experience, which, while not years and years, was full of event, and turn it into a story, not just a rambling diary of what happened to you, and actually structure it so that it's useful and meaningful to someone who wasn't you.
Mm-hmm.
And when you did that, did you? This is often the case for a lot of the memoirists I talk to, as well as myself. Did you learn something about that time that you hadn't understood while you were living it, as you went back and wrote about it?
That's a really good question. I haven't thought about it. You mean like thinking about it much later?
As you were writing it and trying to, you know, because when you write about your own life, you have to take some of the perspective. You know, at the time, you can turn yourself into a victim. You can kind of aggrandize yourself, as the ego will do in the moment, you know. But as you reflect back on what happens, you have to see it through the lens of the writer, of the storyteller. And you kind of have to look at yourself almost like a character. And for me, at least, mm-hmm. I often see those events differently as I do that. Was that the case for you or not?
I think so. I think the challenge in memoir is, yes, you are a character, and the story is sort of revolving around you, but you also need to be an observer, right? Especially when one of the goals is to provide this perspective and shed nuance and all of that. So I tried very, very hard not to get too self-involved and make it look like it was all about me. So I was one character as a traveler, as a narrator. Pakistan is also a character. And I use the country as almost, you know, there's a relationship between me and Pakistan. It's a very emotional relationship, lots of conflicting emotions. And I wanted the country to kind of have a role, too, as I'm figuring it out. And then all the people that I met, I hadn't realized until I started writing the book how it was just meeting those people and having had contact with these catalysts that really made the journey happen. And that's the thing. You know, you can't just go to a country like Pakistan and say, I'm going to have an adventure, and boom, it just happens. You have to meet the right people, and certain events have to fall into place. And then there's the journey kind of takes on a momentum. And that's really what it was. It was just meeting a few key people and having some things fall into place. I met this retired army major, and he was instrumental in getting me to northern Pakistan, the mountainous region where I had the time of my life, and meeting with the royal family and my guide, and all of that came about just as a result of meeting him. And contacts I made through work and all of that stuff. But I hadn't realized how instrumental these people really were to the journey until I wrote about them and turned them into characters. And that's also the realization that a place is really about the people that you meet, that the people are the places. So it just gave me that awareness. So really the story is about me, but in so many ways it's not. It's much more of a collective story of how all of these people sort of came together and made the journey happen. And I'm a very spiritual person, so I believe there was a reason behind it all. It didn't make sense at the time, because at the time it just seems to be a bunch of random things happening. Yeah. But there was a design and a purpose behind it. And I guess it was designed to make the book happen, you know, or something.
Well,
I don't
among
know,
other but, things. But that's so interesting that you said. That's what I was thinking as you were describing all this, is that when you look back at your life, and I've done this many times when I've written, because I write about my own life now, that's it. That's all I write about pretty much. And when I look back at my life, you know, when you're in the midst of it, it's just a bunch of stuff that's happening usually. But it is very easy to see the sort of pattern or the organizing energy that seems to be moving your life forward in its direction. And we call it chance at the time, but as we look back at it, at least in my experience, it feels too strong and too necessary to be called chance anymore when these certain people come at certain times. And, you know, since speaking of which, you said something interesting at the beginning of this our little conversation that to take this journey, you first sort of heard this voice in you say, I've got to do this, right? And that listening is such a critical part, it seems to me, about writing, which is trusting that creative voice that speaks to you throughout the process and really listening to it, even when you're, for me at least, when you're writing memoir. Does that, can you make that connection? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. So the writing of, I always think that writing is like a whole other journey, right? You have the journey, the physical journey, the travels in the Middle East or Pakistan or Boston, wherever. And then you have the other journey, which is just sitting down in your chair at your desk late at night, trying to breathe life into the journey that happened. So there's two different journeys.
Yeah.
And the writing journey is by far the more difficult one. And I started this project and dropped it many, many times. And then after I became a mom, my son was about 15 months old. I felt this need to just go take another crack at it. And it was something I had to do in order to feel a completion. It was almost like I'm having another birth. And it was this thing that was inside me, and I knew that I had to keep hacking away and make it come out. And it was very hard because I was, you know, literally at the end of the day, no energy left, but I would have to recreate something and go to my desk at 10 o'clock at night and stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning working on this. And having to do this time travel thing, too, because there you're sitting at your desk in Kirkland in the middle of January and you're writing about, you know, May of 2003, you know, you're lost in the mountains of northern Pakistan. And you have to do this mind shift, complete mind shift, and try to summon words and images to breathe that story into life. And I don't know how it happened, but somehow you're compelled to do it. And for me, the way I write, especially with memoir, is I just come up with images. All of this is written by memory. It literally is a memoir because it's all filtered through memory. And just remembering certain images and certain phrases, certain feelings, sensory things, you know, what it smells like or what it touched, what it sounded like, and just like certain things that create the story. But it's hard work. It's hard work. I always think that memoir writing is like a sculptor. You know, you've got a piece of stone and you have to keep hacking away at it till you get a shape.
Yeah.
And it's really, really tough. And that desire to do it was very strong. And it just like the desire to travel there, the desire to write was also something I couldn't really let go of. And the more I did it, the more it became a habit, so that I just kept at it and kept at it and kept at it. And it was something I began to look forward to rather than dreading. I was getting more pulled into the story, and it kind of gave me this other life, you know, and
yeah,
an alternate reality that I needed to slip into in the wee hours of the night. And that was the journey I had to take to bring this book into the world.
It really is a journey, because you do travel, and the thing that's, I think, sometimes hard for people who haven't done it to understand is that, just as you were describing, memoir is an act of imagination. It's not that you're inventing what happened, you're not, but you must, it's what else do you have but your imagination, that which transports you to some place other than where you physically are, to live mm-hmm. it as if you were living it.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, it yeah. is. So you are using that same, to say that memoir is uncreative is absolutely inaccurate. It requires just as much imagination to make it real again. You can't just go to your journal and list every little thing that happened. You have to be there again. You have to go in your imagination again and live it again and feel the shame and feel the happiness and smell the smells and see it. It has to happen all, and that's called imagination. That's all it is, right? What else could it be? Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's kind of like three journeys then. There's that recreating the journey is another journey in a way. I haven't thought of it like that. You're absolutely right. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. And that's, I think that having the distance helps.
It does.
Yeah, it does. Because then it becomes a little bit timeless, I think, you know. And you can give it a lot more texture, so it's not just a pure travel story anymore. There's more nuance to it. And in my case, you know, I don't think I would have had as much meaning if I didn't add the background, the childhood memories, and then all the stuff I was going through as an American, as a Pakistani American, and all of that stuff. So there's a lot of filtering going on. Which makes it very subjective. That's how I always tell people, you know, if you want to really learn about Pakistan, you go and you get an encyclopedia, or you study the news. But this is a perspective. It's very subjective, and it's just giving you that texture, you know, the personal stories that you're not hearing about. And I think people are hungry for that. There's a need to go beyond the sound bites, and I've gotten a lot of good, positive reception for it, so that's rewarding. The writing was not easy. The writing has never been easy for me. I never, ever set out to be a writer. It was very much an accidental calling that has come about, and I'm still sort of struggling to embrace it.
Well, I could tell you that what work you've put into it really shows. It was really a well done piece, and you should be proud of it. It's just excellent, and I do recommend it to our listeners if they're interested in just a journey, period, or they want to learn about Pakistan, or just want to read a really good book. Malia, our time is up. Can you believe it? Wasn't that fast?
That's amazing. It was fast,
isn't it? See how time flies.
Yeah.
Well, so this book is out and can be found certainly online, and I'm sure it's in bookstores. I hope you write another book, whether it's memoir or otherwise. And if you do, you let me know, okay?
I will, absolutely.
Okay, Malia, thanks again.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Okay. So everybody, I have just a few seconds left, but, you know, she listened to her voice, and she trusted it, and she let herself take that journey, which is what a book is. That's what a life is. And you don't know where it's going to go. You don't get to pick that. You don't know why you're doing it or where it's headed. But if you listen to that voice, it will take you somewhere you need to be, just as in writing, as life. So let's do it. Voice of love. I